Salvana versus Department, New York State Department of Corrections. Just wait one second, Mr. De Oliveira. Your people are leaving, so let's give them a second.
You are losing your audience.
Yeah.
It's getting me excited, but...
Well, they all went out to buy guns because Judge LaValle told them how easy it was. All right. Mr. De Oliveira, am I pronouncing that right?
You're getting better every time, Judge.
I know it. We saw each other just about a month ago. Again, give it to me.
Good morning. Carl De Oliveira.
De Oliveira. Well, I can't say it the way you can. I mean, that's, my tongue
doesn't
work
that way. You just said it.
Yeah. Say it again.
De Oliveira.
Thank you. Yes.
So you've got 2 minutes for rebuttal, so
yes.
Please begin.
Yes. Good morning. May it please the court. Carlo De Oliveira on behalf of the appellant, Dr. Michael Salvana. Is a public employee's speech protected under the First Amendment when the public employee opposes a policy that removes his discretion to act pursuant to his duties in accordance with the law? This court in Matthews v. City of New York said that it is protected. Likewise, this court said...
Well, it can be. I mean, it really is a very fact-specific inquiry, right?
Correct.
So in this case, it seems that Dr. Salvana was really focused on this policy as it affected his job and his unit. In fact, he brokered, he was negotiating an exception for his group as opposed to the prison-wide or the statewide policy. So why isn't that then really related to his employment as opposed to him writing a letter to the New York Times saying this is a dumb policy?
Yes, Judge Sullivan, that is no different than what happened in Matthews, because the policy Matthews removed the officer's discretion to act pursuant to their duties in a lawful manner. The policy at issue here in this case did the same thing. The policy at issue removed Dr. Salvana's and the doctors under his supervision removed their discretion to provide treatment in accordance with the law, in accordance with the medical standard of care, and in accordance with their ethical obligations not to cause harm to their patients. That is the same fact scenario that applied to the police officer in Montero as well. The complaints that he made about the management decisions of his superiors also affect his ability to perform his job as a police officer in the community. So the question is not whether the criticism of the policy concerns his duties. The question, as Garcetti says, is whether the speech was part and parcel of the ordinary, everyday duties of the employee.
Well, part and parcel of their concerns about their ability to properly execute their duties. And that seemed to be exactly what it was, because he really only wanted the exception for himself and his unit.
Well, Your Honor, we got to put that into context, because Dr. Salvana was at the director of the Walsh Regional Medical Facility, which housed the patients with the most significant conditions in New York State.
I get all that, but I mean, since this is all discussed in the context of his job, in the context of his facility, in the context of his unit, this is not a broad statement about this is an illegal policy and the legislature ought to do something about this.
In fact, this court found that the policy was illegal.
That's not what the point of Dr. Salvana's speech was. His speech was to just make sure that he and the others in his unit weren't bound by this or that they had more leeway.
The record actually is, Your Honor, that Dr. Salvana opposed the policy from the beginning for the reasons explained, that it is preventing doctors from exercising their discretion to provide appropriate treatment to patients. In essence, is compelling a doctor to mistreat a patient, and he opposed that. Well, that was not limited to his...
What do you do with the fact that these communications, on a matter of importance, clearly, were made within the chain of command, within the hospital system, and was not made to the general public or to the legislature?
In fact, Judge Jacobs, he was criticized and warned by his supervisor that he was making complaints outside his chain of command. He made complaints to his supervisor, direct supervisor, but also to the chief medical officers in Albany.
That's going higher up the chain of command. It's not, as Judge Jacobs asked you, it's not going to the public. It's not to the New York Times.
Yes, Judge LaValle, but the question...
He's seeking to get the rule changed.
But the fact that the speech is made to the employer alone does not make a protected speech into an employee speech. As Gassetti said, we must focus on whether the speech is part of the everyday, ordinary duties of the doctor. And the record shows that it was not part of Dr. Salvano's everyday duty to criticize policy. He was not hired to criticize policy that was made by his supervisor, as the record shows, enforced by his supervisor.
You're saying that Garcetti would only apply when it was the employee's duty to criticize, like when he's the ombudsman or he's somebody whose job is to change things in the agency? That's a very narrow reading.
I think Garcetti, Judge LaValle, would have been decided differently if Ceballos, instead of complaining about the fact that he wrote a memo to his supervisors, if he complained that there was a policy that required district attorneys to prosecute cases that they knew had false evidence. That is a violation of the law. And even though, as a prosecutor, that is part and parcel of their duties to act as a prosecutor, the government cannot compel a public employee to violate the law. And this is what has happened in this case. Dr. Salvano was put in a position by this policy to have to be compelled to violate the law, which he refused. It was not part of his duties.
But he didn't suggest that by complying with the policy, he would be violating the law. He just said it was a bad policy and ought to be changed. Right?
Well, no, Judge Sullivan, there are numerous communications where Dr. Salvano says to his superiors that the policy was inhumane. It denied essential medication to patients that he was treating.
Right, and it's not committing a crime. He didn't say that this policy is tantamount to a crime, right?
Well,
that's what Mantero is about. Mantero is about whether or not the subject of the speech would require the person to commit a crime.
Well,
and their refusal to commit is, that's a speech right that has to be protected.
This case is unique because, in fact, the policy that we are talking about was found to be a violation of the law, and this court affirmed that decision. But take the example of Long v. Barn, which was recently decided by this court. The court found that the fact that a clerk believed that her refusal to communicate her discussion with the judicial the Committee on Judicial Conduct to her superior, the town judge, was sufficient protected speech, that she spoke as a citizen because she believed that disclosing that communication was a violation of the law. Here, not only Dr. Salvano believed that what was happening to his patients was a violation of the law, but it actually was a violation of the law because you cannot mistreat patients under your care. And that policy required them to do that. Like in Matthews, they were, I see that my time is almost up. In Matthews, the officer complained that his discretion to perform his duties as a police officer were being taken away, and he was being forced to make arrests to meet a policy that required a quota. And it's the same thing here, Judge Sullivan. The fact that they believe that's a violation is sufficient, but in this case, it is illegal to mistreat patients, and the government cannot compel a public employee to violate the law. The district court likened this case to Weintraub, which is a case that Judge Jacobs was on the panel. But Weintraub is...
You're on a lot of panels. What's up with
that? That case is completely different than the case at hand. First of all, it did not involve a matter of public concern. And while the government has the power to compel a teacher to manage a classroom, which is part and parcel of the everyday ordinary duties of a teacher, the government does not have the power to compel a doctor to mistreat their patients. I see that my time is up.
Yeah, well, you've got 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
So we'll hear from you again. Thank you, Mr. D. Oliveira. I said it right?
Yes.
Good. And Mr. Hitsous, am I pronouncing that right?
Nailed it.
Well, there you go. I'm like a broken clock. All right, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is a First Amendment case. The focus of any First Amendment case is on the speech. What did the speaker actually say? Here, Dr. Salvana's speech didn't merely concern his job duties. He was speaking because he's the Walsh RMU medical director, and the speaking was a means to fulfill his duties. The Walsh RMU medical director is a doctor. He treats patients, but he also occupies an administrative role. So his duties go broader. He has to ensure the quality of care on the unit as a whole, and that involves discussing issues that might affect the quality of patient care. Anything. Some examples would be staffing, equipment. Those were actually proposed by my adversary in the reply brief. But a policy that negatively affects the quality of care would be fair game as well. Anything that's adversely affecting would be something that his superiors, as they declared without any opposition in the summary judgment papers, expected to hear from him. And the content of Dr. Salvana's speech corroborates this in every way. Now, you just heard characterizations of Dr. Salvana's speech that are given post hoc in litigation. He believes that the policy is inhumane. He wants to comply with the law. Those are offered either in his declaration or in his briefing to this court. But
was there another lawsuit, a state case?
There is another lawsuit under state whistleblower laws, yes, Your Honor.
Has he been reinstated under that?
My understanding is that the finalization of a settlement is imminent in that case, and it would involve reinstatement, but I'm not directly involved with the settlement negotiations. I believe my adversary might be. He might be able to shed better light than,
it might be interesting
than I would.
If it's on the verge of mooting this case, if it gives him all the relief that he seeks.
It might moot the request for reinstatement, but because this is a 1983 action, he would be seeking damages. That wouldn't necessarily be moot. But it does show that Dr. Salvana is not without recourse. It's precisely because the First Amendment does not protect whistleblowers categorically that states have stepped in and have statutes like this. Now, one of the reasons that this isn't protected is because of what Dr. Salvana says. We have his actual communications in the record. He's not talking about legal obligations. He's saying that this policy is interfering with the medical judgment of both himself and the other doctors who work under him. He's talking about his qualifications, the qualifications of those doctors. He's saying we don't need another doctor 100 miles away telling us what to do when we're on the ground treating our patients. He's complaining about administrative issues, that this is creating time lags among the nurses.
But you don't deny that if he made those complaints in a letter to the New York Post, that would not be necessarily pursuant to his employment.
It very well might be, Your Honor, because setting is another, it's another factual input at what the context is. What is the perspective from which this person is speaking? So if you're writing a letter to the New York Post, now your audience is the public. A reasonable fact finder could come to the conclusion this person isn't just trying to speak to his employer, he's trying to sound the alarm about an issue. But of course here, we don't have a letter to the New York Post. We don't have a social media post. We have an internal email that's written to his boss and his boss's boss. Now, the chief medical officer is the person who issues this policy, but he's two notches above Dr. Salvana on the chain of command. We take issue with the admonition for speaking outside the chain of command. Now, it's not relevant, but this court could note that the admonition isn't strictly for going outside the chain, but for the tone that that email took, because it expressed, quote, obvious dislike for Dr. Dinello. That's at page 158 of the appellant's appendix. But here, he's speaking to his boss, his boss's boss. This is not a situation like in Matthews. I know my adversary cites the Matthews repeatedly. In Matthews, there was a divide between the precinct commander and the speaker, among other things. In that case, there was also the focus of the speech was on the matter of public concern, not on how it affects my ability to do my job. But you could have a situation where your superior is so far removed from you that you would be, you, the speaker, would be indistinguishable from John Q. Citizen. That's not what we have here. The chief medical officer is well aware of who Dr. Salvana is because of the role he occupies. As Dr. Salvana himself characterizes it, he is the highest medical authority at the Docs Medical Center that treats the sickest patients. That is a position that whose opinion is going to carry great weight on medical issues. And it's evident from this record. The chief medical officer doesn't fob him off, doesn't say, go take it to your boss, Dr. Dinello. He engages with Dr. Salvana start to finish. Within a month or two, he's out at the Walsh RMU visiting it, and then shortly after that, reaches a compromise. All of this tends to show that Dr. Salvana was not only speaking as an employee, but he didn't want to be regarded as a citizen. He wants them to be reminded. He is the medical director of the Walsh RMU because it inures to his benefit. So while this policy might have been boneheaded, maybe everything Dr. Salvana says is accurate. We're not here to talk about the policy. We're not here to defend it. We're here to talk about the perspective from which Dr. Salvana spoke. And it's clear he's not addressing Docs because Docs is a government entity. He's addressing Docs because Docs is his employer. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up our alternative defense of qualified immunity, even if this court had some questions. Qualified immunity would provide an alternative defense. Dr. Salvana's point is well taken in his reply brief. It's not available in all retaliation cases because sometimes the question is, did you retaliate? We know retaliation is bad. Here, the question is whether, as a matter of law, this speech is protected in the first place. And we would contend that all of the cases, for the reasons that I was just elaborating on, would tend to favor the defendants. We've cited cases from out of circuit, like King in the 11th Circuit, Apkarian in the 7th Circuit. But the bottom line is there is no case that's factually analogous that favors Dr. Salvana. He cites to Montero, which of course, Montero was a qualified immunity case. It involved somebody speaking in a union capacity. Matthews, the focus of the speech was completely different. He was protesting the quota policy based on its effect on the community, not on his effect on his own job duties. It happened to affect his job duties. Here we have the reverse. I would also like to point out that in Weintraub, Dr. Salvana tries to distinguish that as not involving a matter of public concern, but that is not what happened in Weintraub. I believe the site is page 201. This court expressly notes, we're not going to get into public concern because we can decide this case on the employee speech element. So trying to distinguish it on the ground that it doesn't involve a matter of public concern is reading far too much into that case. And finally, at the end of the day, as was discussed slightly earlier, Dr. Salvana is not without recourse. Even if the First Amendment isn't available to him, he could pursue claims under state whistleblower law. And to the extent that he would claim that a ruling for defendants in this case somehow chills speech from medical professionals, that's exaggerated. As Judge Sullivan pointed out, these inquiries are fact-driven. They're fact-driven, and frankly, they're delicate. those three inputs that I was discussing before, your duties, the content of the speech, the setting in which it was spoken, if you make small alterations to any of those inputs, that could alter the analysis. I'm not going to concede or speculate whether it would be dispositive, but if this was a different physician who occupied a different role, if this was Dr. Salvana writing a letter to the New York Post, if this was Dr. Salvana phrasing his opposition in a way that was different from what he actually said, which is that this is making it more difficult for me to be a doc's doctor, that could alter the balance, and we might have a different case. We're here to discuss the facts of this case, and on the facts of this case, the district court got it right.
All right, thank you, Mr. Hitzus.
Thank you.
Mr. De Oliveira, we'll hear from you for 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you. Briefly, a few points. I want to refer the court to plaintiff's appellant page 238, which is the job description for Dr. Salvana. So when counsel says that Dr. Salvana had an administrative role, I want the court to be aware that the job description is there, and his only administrative role was with respect to supervising physicians under his supervision. There was no authority for Dr. Salvana to either formulate, comment, or provide feedback on policy of their supervisors. With respect to the state law claim, there was a question asked. The case has not been settled as of now, so there is no there's no resolution to it, and it may or may not go to trial. With respect to the comment about the New York Post,
it would provide him all the relief that he seeks.
You wouldn't provide all the relief because New York State statutory whistleblower statute does not provide for emotional damages, which is part of what is being claimed in this action in federal court. With respect to the comment on New York Post, Matthews, the complaint about the policy at issue was made to his commanders, like Dr. Salvana. There was no need to write a letter to New York Times or New York Post in order to have the speech protected.
No, but the point I think there is that the letter written there was no different than a letter written from a private citizen, that it was to the actor on a policy that affected much more than just the job of the letter writer.
Yes, and as the Supreme Court has pointed out, and this the precedent of this court, is that what matters is if there was a channel that is the same or similar. It doesn't have to be the same channel. And in this case, the record shows that family members and inmates had a similar channel to complain to supervisors all the way up to Albany about their mistreatment and patient treatment. So they have the same civilian analog to make those complaints. So in conclusion, the protected speech does not lose its status as protected speech because it concerns medical care and physicians provide medical care. There's no profession exception to protected speech. Like Garcetti instructs us, what we need to look at is whether the speech is part and parcel of the ordinary everyday duties of the job, not whether it concerned those duties. The Dr. Salvana's complaint about policy was not part and parcel of his everyday job duties. His speech can concern duties and still be protected, like in Jekyll v. Barn, Matthews v. City of New York, and Montero versus City of Yonkers. If the district court's decision stands, from a policy perspective, will discourage doctors employed by the state to report abuse of patients because abuse of patients always concerns their treatment. And if that speech is not protected, they will no longer make those reports. So if a doctor reports an abuse by a correctional officer, it's no different than a doctor reporting an abuse sponsored by the employer, a medical care abuse. So Dr. Salvana cannot be compelled to do that. He cannot be compelled to mistreat his patients. And that's my time is up.
All right. Well, thank you both.
Thank you very much.
We will reserve decision.